Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which this podcast is recorded. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and to Aboriginal elders emerging.
Oh, shit. I've got a call from the warden because I'm in quarantine. Hello? Yeah, I'm good, thank you. No symptoms, I'm great, thanks. Will do, thank you. Bye.
Is that what they do? Do they call you every day?
Yeah, all the time. The first couple of days, they would ring me like every hour and they go, do you have any questions? And then eventually I went, yeah, when will these calls stop? So now I get two calls a day and I have to take the call. It's like, that's my warden checking in, like, you know. So it's like, how are you? Do you have any symptoms? Do you have any questions? But I must say, so we've got full medical here. There's nurses and doctors and stuff, but they also have psychiatrists. So if you feel overwhelmed or whatever, you can phone them and go, I need to talk to someone. And then you get to talk to the psychiatrist about how you feel claustrophobic, how you feel whatever, you know.
That's awesome, because I feel claustrophobic sometimes when I hear there's 400 new cases or something. In my own house, I feel claustrophobic, so I get in there, you could, yeah. It's a nice big room, looks like.
Yeah, it's a nice room. It's, I mean, you can see how dark it is. There's no natural light and I don't get any sunshine, which is really, you don't realise how much you rely on sunshine to keep you sane and to get that. But in saying that, I'm actually a lot calmer than I thought I'd be. I thought I'd be climbing the walls by now, but I'm so busy and I haven't even had time to really start my puzzle, which I was looking forward to.
Yeah, but how many security guards have you rooted?
14.
Yeah, good, good, yeah. Good. That's, you got to keep busy or you'll go crazy.
Keep the numbers up.
Yeah. Good.
No, because I'm in Sydney. We don't have security. We've got the army and we've got the police. And they said, don't open your door.
Really?
They were not fucking around. When we got here, they go, don't open your door. Don't go outside. Don't even think about it. You cannot stroll down the passage. You don't have a key. If you open their doors to get the food and then close it again.
You don't have a key?
No. And you know what I saw? Because there's another comic that's isolating here, Felicity Ward.
Yeah, right.
She's got a little apartment, right? She's got a kitchen. I was like, man, that's amazing. So, because you can order shit. Like, I can order shit from the supermarket. I'm like, oh, that's great. You can order shit and make your own food. That's nice. She goes, nah. Because they disconnect everything, the stove, you don't have a toaster or anything. Because, of course, they can't have a fire because you can't evacuate. You don't have keys. We don't have, you know, it'll be an absolute nightmare if the fire alarm goes off. Then we all have to isolate again.
Oh.
So I'm like, this is full on. Mm. But they do take good care of us.
I'm Michelle Laurie, and this is the Nitty Gritty Committee. Stories about the guts and the glory of life. This week, we're visiting with South African / New Zealand comedian Ursula Carlson, who's in quarantine in a hotel in Sydney because she's replacing Lindsay Lohan as a judge on Australia's Masked Singer. All of that speaks to two things. Firstly, anything is possible in these COVID times. And secondly, anything is possible if you're a comedian. Ursula Carlson's pre-comedy life has given her a particular set of life skills that might make her the perfect woman for our times. Her second Netflix special, Overqualified Loser, is available now. And it's fantastic.
Like, I don't identify as fat, but I've definitely, you know, I'm quite a few meals ahead and a few shits behind. So you'll go away.
Ursula's producing a documentary series while she's in quarantine, which you can see on all of her social media channels. She was planning her next instalment when we caught up for a chat.
Yeah, I think today's one I'm going to focus on the scientists. They reckon now 2 years. They reckon not next year, the year after probably. Like, that's too long.
It's a long time. But I thought I was reading all the headlines saying that they found the cure, haven't they?
In the UK, where they've ordered like 100 million, you know, I'm like, everyone just calm down. because those same scientists have said, even if they go today and say, this is the cure, you mix a bit of bicarb and you shove it up your left nostril while you shove a jelly baby in your asshole, it's still going to take 2 years for this whole thing to, yeah.
Oh, no. I thought it was find a cure today, order jelly babies, stretch asshole.
Shove it up.
And that's it. Tomorrow we all go back to Bali.
Nah.
Fuck.
No, because the people who have it, all this, you know, it still needs to be flattened. It still needs to get out, apparently.
Oh, wow.
But it's so different because everyone's like, yeah, well, like with the masks now, they go, well, you said in the beginning the mask. I'm like, you know what? Shit changes. It's the same, like, what? So you're one of those people that have a kid and then if the kid acts out, you go, hang on.
Yeah.
I have a book here that says this shouldn't be happening. It's like, dude, shit changes. Like,
yeah. The book said you rock from side to side, you pat it, and it stops.
It's warm, it's fed, why aren't it sleeping?
Yeah.
Fucking
speaking
hell.
Of which, you can't see your kids. How long are you in quarantine for?
I'm 2 weeks in Sydney, then 4 weeks in Melbourne, then 2 weeks in quarantine in Auckland, and then so 8 weeks away from them.
And they're really, really used to you not being away from them?
For now, for the past 7 months, yeah. But before that, I'd be away. But I'd never be away for more than 2-3 days without them. If it gets to 4 days, I take them with me. But, of course, this time it's different. It's like, you know, different. I remember in South Africa during the Angolan War when my dad and all my uncles, all the men basically in the suburb had to go. You know, they were off on army camps or on the border patrolling. And it was just, that was normal, you know. You were just one parent down and no one, you know. So, and that's just, like, I just figured that's, the kids will get used to this now. This is our new normal. I'll be home for 3 months, but then I have to be away for 2 months and then I'll be back again.
Yeah. Are you frustrated by, we Australians and New Zealanders, I guess, by our sort of lack of resilience around this? We are so incredibly lucky and we are so unused to having our lives disrupted, mate.
It is weird. And I think those people who are kicking against it, who goes, this is, I'm not wearing a mask. It's because, you know, that feeling when you lie in bed at night and you go, I can't believe this shit is happening. This is insane. But they go with that feeling all day long. That's the problem. It's like they can't get over that hump and go, well, we are all in this together. This is our new reality. They don't get over that. They're like, this shit is insane. I'm just going to go with this vibe all the time.
I guess they're probably the same people who lie in bed at night going, no, I'm not 40. I'm just not.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fine to send this dick pic.
Yeah. Yeah. She wants it.
Yeah. Yeah, we literally just had a politician in New Zealand have to resign today, hashtag fired, because he sent some porn and dick pics and sexually explicit messages to a girl in university, first year university, and he doesn't know what's wrong with that. Apart from the fact that he's married, apart from all of that other shit, now he goes, he's been going through a real tough time. Like, we all go through tough shit, mate. We don't send dick pics and pornographic images to kids. You know, phone your therapist. But now, imagine being married to that. Because you have to go through all of that and I'm married to it. Yeah, if you fuck up, at least you go, I was made in a weird way, you know. Whereas if it's your partner's like, I chose this, I didn't have to.
And then you have to decide what to do about it.
Yeah.
Are you going to stand by your man or are you like, I'm out of here. Yeah. I didn't know this shit. I did not get that. But
mate, I'm out the door so quick. I'm just not the, you know, I can't. I'm not the type to push through any major disaster.
Hello.
Welcome to my documentary. I'm in Sydney in quarantine. A lot of posts that I've been reading about people quarantining have not been very positive. So far, I've had four naps. I've not brushed my hair since I've been here, and it's been 24 hours. I'm not wearing a bra or pants at this stage. All my meals have been provided. Yeah, pretty sweet.
Well, it's day two in quarantine, and I'm not sad. I just had the test done, and they're really getting the back there.
Welcome to Locumentary Sydney, day three. I have cracked, and I'm going to build this puzzle now. Hello, and welcome to my documentary day five. Still going well. You know, haven't felt like leaving the room yet, which is positive. The puzzle is not progressing at all.
Well, I think today's only, is it day five or day six? It's day six.
Yeah, because I've seen day five's documentary, so it can't be still day five. I'm sure it feels it.
Oh, and I forgot to upload day four on my fan page. So I put it on Instagram, I put it on TikTok, I put it on my Facebook, and then I forgot to put it on my fan page. So then I load day five and people are going, oh, my God, I was wondering where day four is. I was wondering if you were all right. I'm like, it's there. And then I realised, oh, shit, it's not. So I had to quickly load it for them.
I can't imagine forgetting to do something. I mean, surely that's what you're living for.
Because I'm real busy still. Like,
what are you doing?
I wake up early because I do radio interviews and stuff in New Zealand, and because they're ahead. So I wake up at like 7 in the morning and do radio stuff and then podcasts and TV stuff. And so I'm just in front of the Zoom screen most of the day.
My daughter, you know, my kids are doing the homeschooling.
Yeah. How old are they?
They're 10. There's a lot of the kids got various forms of, I don't know what, PTSD or something from the Zoom.
Yeah, they would.
She says she feels like she's being watched all day after she's been on Zoom all week. Are you getting some kind of the shudders? Are you dreaming about Zoom?
Yeah, no, totally. But also, I saw a clip of me this morning on Ed and Dave's show, Ed Cavalier and Dave Hughes, and my hair was just completely, like, not brushed at all. There's just this, it looks like I'm going full dreadlock because I've got really curly hair and I didn't touch a brush or nothing. And I didn't, like, I was expecting a phone call or, you know, it was going to be on the radio, but they recorded a little clip. I looked like I was dragged backwards through a bush and then left on the riverbanks for a few days. I looked, you know, and then found disheveled in the forest. And then did this interview. And you can see in the Zoom, I'm not ashamed at all. I'm like, this is it. This is wild me. But then I'm like, oh, shit, I might need to brush my hair occasionally.
Yeah, but this is what we all look like. I mean, I don't think anyone's noticing or thinking any less of you.
No. No, I don't actually think so.
No. This is part of your appeal anyway, which, you know, you're an every woman. This is what we love about you. That you're one of those, you say things that the rest of us think and are too scared to say and all that.
Although,
you know?
Can I just say Donald Trump has ruined that? Like, in the past, I would take that as a compliment, going, you say what we all feel. And but in my mind, I'm like, I'm saying, don't be a dickhead. Like, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And we all think it. But then Donald Trump came along and all of his supporters are going, he's saying what we feel. And I'm like, oh, shit, that's no longer a compliment.
Nah, but in Australia, Pauline Hanson's been saying that for years. I'm just saying what everyone's thinking. And you're not, bitch. You're really
no
not.
No one's on board.
No.
It's like you're the only one in the street kicking the ball. No one's with you, bitch. Go inside. You're crazy.
Yeah, right. No. And you would be doing a lot of interviews, though, because of the Masked Singer thing. And so when that was announced, I mean, Hughesy is an everyman as well. So the fact that you both are judging is great fun. And the fact that they replaced Lindsay Lohan with you is so out of left field, but fun. I mean, what do you reckon?
You just know. That poor wardrobe lady, you know, because I imagine, like, wardrobe people are always like, oh, my God, I had so much fun. I bought these stilettos, and they've got all these Swarovski crystals and with me. So we got you the blue Crocs and the red Crocs.
Oh, God. Oh, God, and the caftan. Tell me your experience about being dressed.
It's very caftan-y.
Because I'm triggered. I got an email the other day for a photo shoot, and they said at the end, oh, and can you just shoot us through your sizes?
Yeah.
And I just, I melted down. Mm. Not because I'm afraid of my sizes. I'm like, I'll tell you my sizes. 18 to 20 and a 10. That's my shoe size, the last one. But I said to her, look, what I'm triggered by is the rack of clothes I know I'm going to show up and see. You know?
Yeah.
You get there and you see all the other ladies' beautiful clothes, and then you turn around and see your fucking mother of the bride rack.
Yeah, you get to the floral ship.
Oh, my God. The black pants, all the three pairs of black pants, and all those floral caftans and long, silky. And you look like.
In a fabric that you go. This is not going to be flattering.
Oh, mate.
I'm gonna look like one of those pearl sealers, you know, the foil that they wrap over that's going to be me. No, so I have these, some ladies, some of the, you know,
stylists,
they do a great job.
Yeah.
But some you go, have you met a bigger lady? So with this one too, they go, we need your measurements. And I went, no. I said, look, I'm built like a brick shit house. I'm a size 20 from top to toe with a size 9 shoe. Lock it in. And they go, yeah, we want your measurements. And I'm like, well, I can't give it to you. Okay, I don't even own a fucking measuring tape. I'm telling you.
Who owns a measuring tape?
Yeah. What it was, it's 1950. I go, actually, I do have a sewing machine and a measuring tape, but that's none of their goddamn business. I'm not going to do it. Just, you know, I'll bring good underwear and you make sure the shit that you put on top, because usually they go all out, we need your measurement. And then you get there and you go, oh, you got these from Target, did you? All of these are from Target. You know, it's like, why did I bother?
Yeah.
When you've got 14 caftans in a row.
Oh, or what's worse than that is when they've got size 14s and they go, well, just try it. Just give it a go. And I go, mate, I don't have to, though.
And my head won't fit through. Yeah.
Just try it. And then they make you walk in front of them in it. And then they go, oh.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's awful.
Isn't it?
Yeah. No, the beauty now, because I'm 45 years old, I just go, I'm not doing that. And not being mean, but I know me and I know what I'm going to be comfortable with, and it's not that shit, okay? I'm never going to be. In saying that too, sometimes I go, I have to trust the system, because I have tried stuff on where I go, oh, I actually fucking like this a lot, you know?
But I feel like in the past, when I was younger, I'd get defensive and I could come off like a bit of a bitch and sort of go, no, no, no. Whereas now I can be honest and say everything we've just said, and then they'll be kinder.
Yeah.
And you're more likely to get help.
Even now I'm waiting because they're going out. And also now, like in the past, they go, we got you some heels. We know you said no, but. And then you look and you go, oh, there's only stilettos there. So now I go, listen, no heels. Because I'm sitting. No one's going to see my feet. Why am I murdering my feet here?
Yeah.
You know, like they don't even see my. I can go in my pajama pants and a blouse. Let's knock this out. I'm going to be sitting on my ass behind a desk. I don't need stilettos at this point. And also, we're not rushing the stage at any time. I go, no heels. I'm telling you, no heels. Okay, so they go to the show and they go, take my number and WhatsApp me. So they send photos and then I send a tick for yes or a skull for no.
Skull.
Yeah. And try and keep me out of a polyester suit. Like, that's kind of all I want. No stilettos and no polyester suit.
The thing about being a stand-up is you have to be on stage in front of people all the time. You have to find a way to dress yourself where you feel powerful and confident. We can see you in lots of comedy specials where you obviously, you look great, you feel great, and you feel strong and powerful. So there's your template.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm comfortable. So let's go with that. If you feel comfortable, then all that other shit comes to it. You feel confident. Then you feel stronger. Then you feel more power. You know, like you feel like your voice will be heard. But if you feel like, oh God, I need to. Is my tit hanging out? Can you see something? You know,
Or if you can't breathe because they've got you like wrapped up in spandex underneath.
Yeah. No. The minute they go, so can you bring some Spanx? I'm like, no, I can't, because you know what, I might want to sit there and eat. Lunch at some point or have a cup of tea without scared that I'm going to pop something like a balloon put under pressure.
Hold up.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The latest special, I watched and I just watched it again, and it's so funny. Overqualified loser, right? But it makes me wonder, the whole purpose of it, it seems to me, is to encourage other people and empower other people and say to them, you're not a loser. If you think this and you think that makes you a loser, it doesn't, which is beautiful. Did you at some point think you were a loser? And if so, when did it change? How did it change?
Well, I mean, I think everyone sort of has a thing. Like, I've always been confident, and I think that comes from my mum, you know, where she's like, you can do whatever you want. And I truly believe that. I watched a movie in high school with my brother called Samantha. And in it, the whole slogan for the thing is, like, her whole life, she just goes, if they can do it, I can do it, or it can't be done. So my entire late teens and my 20s were just that. If they can do it, I can do it, or it can't be done. Like, if anyone can do it, I should be. Like, I fully believe I can become, well, like, I can do brain surgery. Sure, I have to go to university and I have to be, you know, it'll take years, but I can do it. Like, I'm 100% confident of it. Certain things I know I can't. Like, I think it's being honest with yourself, and the older you get, the more you get into that zone where you're like, I know myself now and I know what I can and cannot do, or what I'm prepared. Like, you know, when you're younger, you sort of risk things, but now I don't. I'm like, no, it's cool. I don't need it to, you know, boost me up or nothing. You know, like, I'm comfortable with myself. So, no, I didn't really feel like a loser. I think the whole thing came from because I see the bullying in schools. My brother and sister both have teenagers at home now, and I see what they're going through. And now my kids are 3 and my daughter just turned 7, and now she's starting school, and already you see the bullying in school.
Oh mate, yeah, at 10, yeah, it's intense. And the online bullying in their little WhatsApp group is full on.
It's crazy. So I'm like, you know what, the more I sort of sat and thought about it, and I talk to my nephews especially a lot, you know, the 2 oldest ones, and I'm like, if you own your own shit, you know, and you go, all right, let's just unpack what we have, right? You go, yeah, I am, you know, because loser is something they say all the time. Teenagers say loser all the time. If you have a teenager at home, you'll hear the word loser about 50,000 times a day. So I was like, you know, If you just honest with yourself, go, yeah, I do this stuff that could see me as being a loser, but so does everyone else. You know, there's so many things, and there will be so many more in my future. Like, as adults, this shit doesn't stop. It just carries on. We just sort of don't. We're not as saturated. The only difference between adults and kids is when you're a kid, you're in an environment where you're with hundreds of people your age, and you're in the same situation, and you're, like my brother calls it, the milk loin. You will never be in school again, you know, with your peers, with people your age, with exactly what you're going through, with the same needs and the same wants as you, ever in your life, as in the milk loin, you know, where you, like, you won't. He says, but there's benefits to everything. Like, when you're in the milk loin, it's easier to make friends because you're surrounded by people with exactly the same wants and needs as you and going through exactly the same situation. Whereas as an adult, you don't have the milk line, so it's a whole mixture of different people. So it's easier to make friends, but it's also harder because those people can pick on you because they know exactly what you're going through. And it's easier to pick on people because you know all their buttons because you have it too. So, but if you own your shit, like, with go, yeah, I'm a loser, and I will probably be a loser again at some point, then it's hard for people to bully. Like, I always say to my nephew, I go, if you have a tail, then you should go out and be proud of your tail. Say to people, look at my tail. It wags when I'm happy. And then when people try and bully you about it, go, oh, you've got a tail. You go, I know, I showed you. Boom. You've taken the wind out of the sails. They cannot bully you for it. So I'm like, we need to take back that stuff, you know, so.
Yeah. It's like the way you talk so much about your weight. I talked about it a little bit in stand-up, but I remember just saying that I realised that I didn't talk about being overweight because I thought it was a secret.
Yeah.
You know, I thought if I didn't mention it, no one else would realise for a long time. Do you get much pushback about that? Because I've had other women comedians say things like, oh, I won't talk about my body because, you know, I don't want to be that. I don't want to be a woman talking about her weight and all that all the time. But then other women who say, yes, I do talk about it because it's put upon us anyway. So I want to be the person who talks about it. And it's liberating.
Well, I mean, especially now after the special came out, because in the special I talk about anti-vaxxers and I go, you know, like, you do what you want to do, but we vaccinate because we understand words and, you know, and to be nice to anti-vaxxers because they have sick kids at home. So out of that, of course, I had heaps of people go, well, like, I'm going to take advice from a fat bitch, you know, health advice from a fat bitch. And I'm like, people will find that thing. That's, again, like, if you have a tail, talk about it, because it disarms it. It's like, you know, people call me fat online all the time. I go, well, you're fat. I go, I know. Like, I've built a career on it. Thank you so much. You know, like, like, if they can see it, I think you should address it, disarm it, and carry on. And because, like you say, there's a lot of people sitting in the audience going through that shit. Like, I don't think there's a bigger angst in people's lives than their weight and the way they look. So if you go out and go, no one's perfect, even the hottest people in the room, you know, you can be perfect body shape. There's something that someone hates about themselves. Yeah. You know, like, that's how we're programmed as human beings. Like, you may as well address it. And say to people, I'm comfortable with this. And I always say, if you address it quickly and you go, this is my shit, and it's got nothing to do with you, then other people can't hurt you. Because I was going, you can't hurt me. I've been rejected by better. You know, I've been hurt by better. So you on your Twitter account or your Facebook account, it does nothing to me. Like, I just click block and I never even think about you anymore. Even if you put together a whole campaign of hate, I literally will not remember your name in a day or two because there's so much positive stuff that comes through from it.
In reality, you are a 45-year-old woman who is talented, has a family who loves you, and you've just become famous in a second country, which I think is really a pretty great achievement. Like, do you feel that? Do you feel, like, pretty empowered by that? You've just conquered another country.
No, I don't really think about that. Like, I'm still amazed. I always say I'm still amazed. Whenever I walk out on stage and there's an audience there, I'm like, how did you guys know? You know, like when I just started in comedy and, yeah, I started in New Zealand. So I went full-time comedy 10 years ago and I started doing comedy 12 years ago for the first time. And then, you know, if 8 tickets sold, I'd ring my friend Elizabeth. I go, did you just buy 8 tickets? And she goes, yeah, I did. It's my work, you know. Like, I would know exactly who's in the audience. Like, I go, Monday night's my work friends. Tuesday night is her work friends. Wednesday, you know, like, I'd stagger it. Whereas now, like, I walk out and I'm like, there's a whole theatre of people to see me. Like, I still find it amazing. Or sometimes I'll be out with the kids and people will look at me and I'll go, hey, how are you? Like, I'm like, why are you staring at me? And then I realise they know me from telly or whatever. And I'm like, oh yeah, of course.
Yeah. I know, it's fun. My mum lives with me and I just said to her this morning, you know, I'm doing a Zoom. She's like, oh, who are you talking to? I said, Ursula Carlson. She goes, oh my God, I love her. And she just listed off all these things that she'd seen you in and seen you on. And, you know, so yeah, you've got that name recognition. You know, she's a, I don't know, 70-year-old lady who's just rocking around the place. You know, that's nice, right?
Yeah, that's great. Say hi to your mum. It hasn't changed me. I always say, like, when you hear, you know, people's stories about, you know, when they heard about their Netflix special, when they got the call, where they were and what they were doing. So when I got the call for the first one, that Comedians of the World thing that we filmed in Montreal a couple of years ago, I was at home and I had hired a log splitter, from, you know, from the tool rental place. And like, it's quite loud, it's massive. And I was doing that, and my brother was helping me. He was chopping up with an axe, you know, and I was pushing the... So I got the call, I shut the machine down, I took the call, and I sort of wave at him, and he takes his ear muffler off. I go, oh, my God, that was Netflix. They just offered me a 30-minute special on Comedians of the World. I go, like, I was just blown away. And he goes, you probably want to fire that thing up again. We only have it for another, like, hour. I'm like, oh, yeah, fair, cool. Ear muffler's on, and I started splitting wood.
What year was that? When was that?
That was 2 years ago. Yeah, split three cubes after I heard the news. And then with this call that I got for this one, I was in Melbourne and I met the girls from Netflix. They came to the show and then stayed for selfies. And I was like, this is amazing. And then I got a call about a week later. But I was sitting on the floor in the lounge changing my son's nappy, number two. Oh, pretty impressive, number two.
Yeah.
And we've got a Labrador, so, you know. It's full on to try and keep the dog away from the baby.
Yeah.
So I'm changing his nappy, and then I get the phone call to say that I've got a, they want to offer me a 1 hour special of my own, global, on the homepage, the whole thing. And I'm like, oh, this is amazing. But the whole time I've got my foot out trying to get the Labrador off the nappy and trying to keep my son's hips straight so he doesn't roll around, because I haven't had a chance to wipe. I've just taken the nappy off, like, yeah. You know, and then I got the call and I was like, I'm like, so there's no changing. It's like when you have kids, when you have, you know, sort of.
Yeah.
The only way that I think it has changed me is comedy in general, not just the specials, but even, you know, say the last 5-6 years is because, you know, I grew up extremely poor, like very poor. And then as an immigrant, there's no money, you know, like you have no money for a very long time. So, but for the last 5 or 6 years, I've sort of been more financially free, that I have more options and I can say no to certain jobs, and I can, so that is new to me, because I've never my entire life been, you know, sort of financially secure, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So, but now it's like, oh, I don't have to worry. So that worry has been taken off me, which has been a huge thing for me.
I think there's something different too about people who start comedy, I'm going to say later, at 35. I started at 20, and a lot of people in my circle of friends and my sort of generation of comedians, I'm the same age as you, but we started at 20. There's a whole big gang of us. I don't know. There's just I don't know how to describe it. It's a positive, definitely, about your attitude and there's a lightness about your being, you know, in terms of your comedy still, that I think that a lot of us have lost.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? What's your observation?
Yeah, well, when I just got into comedy, because I was in my 30s and, you know, I kind of thought, I don't want to struggle financially. I don't want it to be a hardship, you know, like I'd struggled enough. I was at the point where I'm like, I don't want to couch surf. I don't want to, you know.
So how did you not? Because, I mean, it was one thing to be broke when you're 20, you know, and you don't have any.
Because when you're young and you're struggling and you're having fish and chips on the beach and you're laughing and you're having a scrumpy and, you know, like.
What's a scrumpy?
A cider, one of those 2-litre bottles of cider.
Oh, right, yeah.
That's almost romantic, isn't it? It's like you look back at it and you go, like, I had the same, but I was working in pubs and stuff as I was doing an apprenticeship type setting. You know, you want to struggle almost when you're young because it's romantic. But then the older you get, the less fun it is. It's like, oh, now I don't want to struggle anymore. I don't want to be making my own kitchen utensils in my 40s, you know. I want the good stuff. I want the good coffee machine. I don't want to drink cheap coffee. I don't want the cheap toilet paper that gives me paper cuts in my asshole. You know, you want a certain level of comfort and you're like, why am I still struggling when I'm 45 years old? You know, you sort of, like I say, the romance leaves the poverty, you know, where you go, it's no longer cool. So when I just started, and I even said to my wife at the time, I go, it's either balls to the wall and I'm going to do this hard out. And I worked And I still do very hard. Like, I would do, on average, 6 gigs a week. Sometimes I'll do, like, especially when I just started out during festivals, I can do between 5 and 10 shows a night, you know. Some, like, I'll do 2 of my own shows and then I'll do lineup shows, you know. I literally run from one venue to the other and just do as much as I can. Because I'm like, I am not going to struggle. Even if I do 5 gigs for $40 each a night, so I get the money, but I also get the stage time. And while I was doing that, I was still freelancing and doing on the side copywriting and photo retouching. And so I was extremely tired in the beginning, you know, and even today, I still have my Photoshop subscription now so that I can stay on top of it. So if the wheels fall off, I'm going back to that because I'm not going to struggle. It's just not on the cards for me. I'm beyond that. I don't want to do that anymore. And I think just that hunger, just that thing in my head where I'm like, failure is not an option here. I'm either going to do it. And also because then once I went pro, you know, full-time comedy, that's when we had our first kid, basically. And I was like, yeah. I'm not going to struggle here. I don't want my kids to go through that angst where you go, oh, there's no money for anything. There's no, you know, we can't do any extracurricular activities because there's no money. I'm like, I'm not doing that.
So it's like you have the life experience by the time you started comedy. You clearly had the talent. So from the very beginning, you must have had enough feedback and enough positive feedback, enough good gigs when you were very early on to know that you could do it.
Well, I mean, I did for a year there after I decided, okay, that's it, I'm going to do it. For a year solid, I just was not very good. It was not a very good experience, but
there must have been enough laughs though for you to think, oh, I'll go again, I'll try again.
You know what? I think after that, like, so the first year was great. Then the second year was when it was just really not good at all. I just got to a phase there where I was like, okay, I know there's some, I know it's there, but I don't know how to fix it or how to get to it. But I know if I keep going, it'll come. It's almost like I got that first hit. It was good. And now I was just trying my best to get that hit again. And then, but it took me, it's like, you know, with anything, like even I used to work for in a factory, like, and the first year or so, I wasn't very good at it, but I didn't even realize I wasn't very good at it. It was only when I started getting really good at it that I realized, oh, fuck, the first year wasn't very good at all. I didn't know that, but it was fun, you know. But then you eventually just get to a point where you're like, oh, I see how it works. And then so I actually needed that year that wasn't very good to pick all the mistakes that I was making. So it was good.
It's funny, isn't it, when you start doing stand-up, you never know if you're going to have a good gig or not. But then you cross this threshold where you just know how to do it, and then you don't really have bad gigs after that, unless something goes terribly wrong. But, yeah, some one day you just kind of learn how to do it.
Yeah, when you go, even if it's bad, I know how to fix it.
Yeah, exactly. Or I know what I did or whatever.
Yeah. But also I'm real honest with the audience. Like, I'll go, this isn't going very well, is it?
Yeah. Do you have any nerves? Because people will say to me now, before something, anything, any public speaking thing, because I think we forget that for most people, public speaking is the most terrifying thing. But for us, it's just not. Do you have any nerves at all?
Yeah, I suffer terribly from stage fright.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, terribly.
No
yeah.
way.
Yeah. I always say that bit where I'm standing side of stage, you know, before you go on, that like 5 minutes when you're sort of there, you're ready. And then they call your name or you get introduced, and then where you walk from the side of stage to the microphone. That is the longest walk for me. And the whole time while I'm standing side of stage, I'm like, why the fuck am I doing this? I've got other stuff that I can pull. I can go back to advertising. I can go back to printing. Why am I doing this shit?
Even now when they're all there to see you.
Even now. I get panicky just thinking about it, just thinking about that walk out.
I can see that.
But then once I'm out, once I take the mic out of the stand and I put the mic stand here, and by the time I turn, then I'm fine. Like, not even the first laugh. I just need to survive that. And then I'm fine.
Wow. I could see you and hear your breathing get shallow.
Yeah,
and
that's awesome.
I had a big break once and then I came back and did a one-woman show and my intro music was Robbie Williams' Let Me Entertain You, and still to this day when I hear that song, I go...
Yeah. It's insane. It's like, so I'm really good friends. I call her my straight wife, Irene Pink. She's also a comedian. She's Polynesian comic based in New Zealand. And she suffers really bad with stage fright too. And that's kind of the thing that got us together initially, you know, just our sheer terror of the stage. And now, but the thing, the difference is, like, I love it so much. I love being out on stage and I love performing and I love telling jokes so much. Whereas for her, she goes, that thing afterwards, you know, when you come off stage and that buzz that you feel and that almost hero worship from the crowd, she goes, that thing that feeds you, she goes, it's not enough to sustain her, to keep her going back. So she loves comedy. So she'll do like maybe two shows a year. And she's so good. She'll be amazing. But she's so some, like, being, you know, talking to her kind of keeps me on the track in the sense of, I know if I give in to the stage fright, then I won't have this as a job. Oh, this can't be it.
Yeah. Isn't comedy a great world, though? Don't you meet the best people and...
Yeah. I love it. I love it. I love everything about it. I love how I didn't even know the jobs that come off the side of this thing. You know, from copywriting to stage, like, I've done acting, I've done, you know, it's amazing. Like, I've done the weirdest stuff since I started doing this. And when I used to work for the newspaper in South Africa, I thought this is the best job ever because no day is the same. But then I started doing comedy and I'm like, you don't even know what your job entails. Like, you can get a job going, so we're looking for someone we can dunk in the river. you know, so they're like, yeah, I guess that's my job. I'll be there, you know.
You know, will you be a judge on The Masked Singer? Because Lindsay Lohan can't come back. I mean, what the fuck?
Yeah, and like, I always say, I won't do reality TV shows.
Me neither.
No, that's just not for me. Like, you're never going to see me in Big Brother. You never, ever, as long as God is my witness and there's grass on earth and water in the ocean, I will not go on the jungle or dancing or anywhere where they mean to each other.
No.
You know, I can't stand that. Like, if there's a Simon Cowell type scenario, like, even when they said, do you want to be on the panelists for this thing? I'm like, is anyone mean? And they go, no, there's no mean. It's like a talent competition and you basically, it's more about guessing who's, I'm like, yeah, I can do that.
I know, and everyone's talented and everyone's like kind. And Dani Minogue is one of the most beautiful human beings in the world. She's such a kind, I mean, I don't know her. I've met her a couple of times and she's just the sweetest, kindest, most generous person.
She texts me every day, like about four or five times. Are you okay? How's it going? You know, like...
And Husey, same. Husey's like, is just such a generous, kind person. You're just going to have such a lovely time.
Yeah, man. Even Jackie, she's also messaging me the whole time. Do you need anything? I'm like, these people don't know me from a bar of soap. Jackie always messaging me, mate, can I send you something? I'm like,
yes. You're so right. Both of them, Kyle and Jack, both have been very kind to me. Yeah.
I'm like, holy hell, this is great. So now I'm having, like, I had less than 24 hours to get my shit in a bag and come over from when I found out.
No business like it.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, that's what I say. Oh, this is part of the job. This is part of comedy. Okay. Because before I did my first open mic night, before I ever did stand-up, I'd never even been to a stand-up show. I didn't even know it was a thing.
How did you know how to write it?
I didn't. I just...
You just learn on the
yeah,
job,
yeah, no,
hey?
Because my mate just kept saying, you're so funny. And I go... And he was, like, a massive comedy fan. He still is. Like, and then he signed me up to do it. And I was like... I go, what would I talk about? He goes, exactly the shit you talked about this morning. Talk about that on stage.
What's the dream for you? Are you a five-year plan person? Or?
Yeah, I am. Because I never think... I don't think you ever get to a point where you're like, I've made it. You know, I think if you get there, then you're dead or you retire. This is my passion. This is what I love. This is, I feel like I was born to do this. Like, as soon as I started, I'm like, this is it. Like, even I'm scared of it. But I think it's healthy too. Like, I get nervous if I'm not scared, you know, then I'm like, this is obviously going to suck because I'm not scared. And then I get scared because I'm not scared. And then the fear's back, which is good. Like, I always thought as a comic, if you go and do Just for Laughs in Montreal, then that's it. You've cracked it. But I've done it twice. So now I'm like, and even while I was doing it, I'm like, what's next? What else can I? And then I saw a Netflix special. So now I've got two. And I'm like, okay, what's next? So I reckon the way I see it is the specials out there. Ellen will see it. I will go on Ellen. Then Oprah will watch Ellen. She'll go, oh, who's this? And then she'll organize an interview with me. And then she'll, oh, you've got a book. And then she'll read the book and she'll put it on her book club. And then Michelle Obama will read it and Gail will read it. And all of a sudden I'm best friends with Oprah and Gail and Michelle Obama. And then, so that's a 5-year plan. I haven't given it a lot of thought, but that's basically.
Well, I mean, you know, you've done all right so far.
Yeah. So I'll keep you posted, re-Oprah.
Yeah, please do. Please. Oh, well, you probably won't need to because I'll see it on Instagram.
Yeah, so both specials, I have a little Oprah pin and I put it on my collar for the record. So
she's always with you.
Yeah, so you don't know, but the power is there, you know, so.
Oh.
Yeah.
I get it, though. I totally get it. I'm a woman of your generation and I get all of that. That's beautiful. Trying to explain to my daughter the magnitude of Oprah is really fascinating because she's 10 and she's like, but why? And I'm like, but what do you mean?
Yeah.
Like, you know,
just shut your mouth and watch the YouTube clip. Now, do you see, because when I was a kid, I'd come home from school and then Oprah would start.
Same.
15 minutes after. So I'd get home, make myself a lunch or a juice or whatever, go sit down, watch Oprah, then go do my homework.
Yeah, and we lived the journey with Oprah,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
The whole journey.
And everything. Big Oprah, little Oprah. Big Oprah, little Oprah. Medium Oprah, big Oprah. Little Oprah, you know? Yeah. Happy Oprah, sad Oprah.
Yes. Yeah. Spiritual Oprah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm loving your journey. You're a life giver. You're a joy giver.
Oh,
babes.
Thank you.
And I'm loving
you. Thank you.
And I punched the sky when I read about you on The Masked Singer. I really did for so many reasons. I was like, that's crazy, Channel 10, and crazy in just the greatest bloody way that we need in these shit COVID times.
Yeah, man, I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be amazing.
Ursula Carlson, who you can follow on every social media platform known to man, you can see on Australia's Masked Singer, and you can watch right now on Netflix in Overqualified Loser. Thank you for downloading this episode of the Nitty Gritty Committee. If you liked it, why not leave us a nice review and 5 stars? It's good karma. We'll be back next week.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.